Hey y'all, you are listening to Christian Anarchy, and I'm your host, Jeremiah. A brief note about me. When the government dreams, I'm its worst nightmare. We begin with concluding remarks. Break up the pieces and examine the parts. Your words always cut when they're cliche. But here's my knife because I came for the buffet. This is the way it goes when you are part of it. Nervously saying words, then also typing. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me today. I promise today's show will be a sad and a frustrating one. The occasion of this particular podcast was that last week I accidentally saw an Instagram video when scrolling through Facebook. It's one of those where when you're scrolling through, it starts automatically playing. And I watched too much of it and then ended up just watching the whole thing. And it's a video where a man was holding a knife, his back was against the wall, and about 10 cops were surrounding him, and he wasn't moving aggressively, and then kind of out of nowhere when he's just standing there, a first gun goes off, and he starts walking kind of slowly, looking stunned, and then the camera pans away and you can't see anything, and it sounds like all the officers just unloaded on him. What it feels like when you listen to it is like there were 100 bullets fired into the man, but I think it always sounds like more bullets than what it actually is. It was probably only 20 or something like that. And I don't know anything about this guy. I don't know anything about his story. I didn't research it. He could be a murderer who killed 100 people. But just watching that video was a reminder to me about all the police brutality that has gone on this year. In the U.S., police have killed over 1,100 people in 2015. And the year's not even over. This is still way over their average and way more than most Western countries. I'm sure some of these killings are in self-defense, but many of them are children, innocent people, nonviolent offenders, and people who died simply because of situations that were handled poorly by the police and could have been handled and should have been handled much differently. So when I saw this video of this man being executed, my heart broke because I thought of all these other stories and I just started weeping. I decided I wanted more people to hear about stories like this, and the discussion of this is closely tied to anarchy. Plus, this is the biggest platform I have to share people's stories. And thus, I decided to use this podcast episode to share some stories of police abuse and talk about the problem of police brutality and the lack of accountability of individuals and of the organization in general. One of the main reasons for doing this episode today was to share the stories of innocent victims who can no longer share theirs because they are gone. And if you care about these stories and recognizing innocent victims of police, one website you can go to, and I'm not a huge fan of the format, but I'm a huge fan of the concept, is Innocent Down. That's www.innocentdown.org. So today I'm going to share a few stories which are emblematic of something happening very regularly in our world today. Cops are murdering people and getting away with it. There are many good websites out there which document these types of stories. You have copblock.org, filmingcops.com, and thefreethoughtproject.com are some of the best. And I don't recommend you visit these sites unless you're in a good mood. It's quite depressing sometimes to learn about so many different police injustices happening across the U.S. It sucks that they exist, but I'm really grateful for people who are willing to expose these kinds of stories and this kind of corruption. And I'm grateful that now we have cell phone cameras and cameras all over the place, so we can get much more information than we could in the past. Hopefully, exposure will help with future accountability. But exposure has not seemed to lead to more accountability yet. From hundreds of stories, I have selected three. And these stories are about people who were murdered by cops. They're not the most egregious ones out there, or the saddest, or the most popular stories in the news, but they each represent many other stories of a similar type in the wide world of on-duty police murders. Now, today I have a lot of links and I make a lot of truth claims and numbers claims, and I believe I have linked to every single claim I've made and to the original authors of every single story I've read. And if you'd like to look at this stuff or confirm it or read more about it on your own, you can go to www.christianarchy.net and search for 27 in the search bar. That's 27. And that should lead you right to this episode, number 27, where I will have links provided to all these stories, as well as any specific truth claims I make this episode. The first story is about a man named Kelly Thomas. He was a known schizophrenic, 37-year-old homeless man in Fullerton, California. Police received reports of someone possibly breaking into vehicles in a transit station parking lot. When they showed up on the scene, they found Kelly, a man some of the police officers were aware of before. They had him sit down on the curb to question him. During this questioning, Thomas appears to be confused and he is slow to respond to their requests for both his actions and for information, which is actually perfectly legal and within his rights if he were being deliberate about his slowness and obscurity, as he wasn't charged with a crime, wasn't told he was being arrested under suspicion, and wasn't ever told he was being taken in for questioning. However, the evidence seems to indicate this schizophrenic man did not have all his wits about him at the moment, and he is acting the way one would expect a mentally confused man to act. Instead of trying to arrest him under suspicion of breaking into cars or bring him in for further questioning or have patience in the moment while Kelly is slow to answer their questions, one of the officers says, "You see these fists?" Thomas replies, "Yeah, what about them?" The officer responds, "They are going to F you up." You know what doesn't happen in this moment? None of the other officers at the scene reprimand the one who just made a violent threat towards someone else. They don't say, "You can't do that," or "What a horrible thing to say to a mentally disabled person." They all go along with it. Soon after these words, the cop started assaulting Kelly Thomas, and the officers at the scene joined in on the beating. They tasered him, punched him, kicked him, hit him in the back of the head with the taser. Most of this scene was caught on video. Over the course of this 9-minute brutalization of a mentally disabled homeless man, Kelly cried out a number of things, counted by those willing to watch the video more than once. He cried out things like, "I can't breathe," and "Help me, God." He responded okay 29 times over the course of the video, trying to demonstrate, or seemingly trying to demonstrate, a willingness for cooperation. He called out for his dad 31 times, hoping that his childhood protector could somehow hear him and save him from these bullies in blue costumes. He cried out, "Help me," 26 times. During the beating, he said, "I'm sorry," 15 times, hoping to somehow calm the officers down and escape with his life. But no matter what he screamed out, the beating went on and on. After the long brutalization, the EMTs arrived on the scene. They were immediately sent to tend to the scrape on the elbow of one of the cops and were not made aware of the unconscious Kelly Thomas lying nearby. He never woke up, and he died in the hospital. This is a tragic example of police actually starting out serving a legitimate purpose, seeking to find a thief, but it turned into a bloodbath. Whether police headed out for Kelly, were in an angry mood, or were just feeling especially aggressive that night, who knows? But the fact is, they initiated violence on someone else and then beat him to death. Once they started hitting, it was like a switch flipped, and they turned into a pack of hungry wolves who just want to kill their prey, who do not understand their victim's pleas or care when they cry for help. They just want to eat him. Of the 6 officers present, not one of them heeded the cries for help or tried to stop their fellow officers or did anything to prevent this man's death. 0 of 6 sought to defend the citizen they are supposed to protect and serve. In the aftermath of Kelly Thomas being beaten to death, two of the police were tried for murder and were not convicted. Then charges against another officer were dropped, and the other three who were present at the murder were back on duty right away and were never charged with anything. They beat a man to death on video, and they got to walk free. The next story is about an officer who was a little trigger-happy. There was a warrant out for a man's arrest, so the police do what they do when this is the case. They show up at this man's house and knock on the door to arrest him. Perfectly normal behavior. But when they show up, the first person they see is not the man, but his son. And this story comes from Filming Cops. I'll read to you a section of it from that article. At around 7:30 p.m., young Christopher took out his Nintendo Wii controller to put on a movie. As he was sitting down, he suddenly heard knocking on the front door. A Nintendo Wii controller. He asked, "Who is it?" but received no response. At that point, he got up from his chair and opened the door. To his shock, the female cop already had her gun drawn and pointed at him, according to reports. She immediately fired a bullet into the boy's chest and killed him, according to Renee Vance, the boy's aunt. The police claim that he had a handgun. It was actually the boy's small Nintendo Wii controller. The officer gave him no warning to drop the controller before taking his life, the aunt added. The police claimed to be at his house regarding a probation matter. It turns out it had nothing to do with Christopher. His 13-year-old sister heard the gunshot and ran over to the door to find her brother bleeding and crying. The little sister held her brother and tried to comfort him as he cried in pain, according to reports. That's when the female cop pointed her gun at the child and said, "Shut up," according to reports, forcing the girl away. Moments later, Christopher bled to death. Both the female officer and the officer who was with her have received, quote, paid administrative leave, unquote, as the investigation proceeds. And that's the end of the section from filmingcops.com. And the investigation proceeded. The officer was never charged and got a paid vacation in the meantime because she killed someone. The officer went onto someone else's property and shot and killed a kid who was trying to watch a movie and was considerate enough to open the front door. Apparently, this is perfectly acceptable behavior for police. It's certainly not criminal. You should always look out your window to see who is outside before you open the door, especially if they don't respond when you ask them who it is. It might be a dangerous person with a gun. The final story I want to tell you about is one of escalations. It is in some ways more sensible than the previous stories, and in some ways more senseless. It is about an armed man with weapons who initiated a confrontation and an unarmed teenage boy, barely old enough to drive, who engaged in a small battle of wills that resulted in the boy's death. Devin Guilford had just given his brother a ride to church and was driving back after dropping him off. On his way back, it appeared to him another driver had his brights on while driving in the opposite direction of other cars. So, like a considerate driver, who is interested in keeping everyone safe on the roads, Devin flashed his lights at the car to help them become aware that their brights were on. Turns out, that car was a police car with a man named Jonathan Frost in it. Frost pulls Devin over and turns his body cam on. He is heard saying that he didn't have his brights on. Through the slightly opened window when he comes up to the car, 17-year-old Devin and Frost argue a little back and forth about whether the cop had his brights on. The officer tells Devin it's against the law to flash your lights at another car, which is kind of a stupid law, and it was deemed by the Supreme Court to be an act of free speech, but totally a different topic. After Devin is assured that Frost is an officer, he starts recording on his cell phone and says it's for his safety and for the officer's safety. It's a wise move, but it's not foolproof. Devin and the officer go back and forth a little bit about some semantics of laws about police giving out their badge number. Devin does not have his driver's license with him. He tells the officer he had it at home, and he forgot about it as he was just going back and forth to Church Quick, which was not far away. Devin is trying to say he doesn't need to show his license because he didn't commit any crime. It's a discussion about the details of laws. Devin appears afraid of being taken to jail and is trying to flex his rights a little. He says he is going to call his girlfriend, who has his license, presumably to bring it to him to prove to the cop he is a legally licensed driver. The officer gets increasingly agitated. He opens the car door and tries to yank Devin out of the vehicle, but Devin yells, "Don't touch me." The cop gets out his taser and tells Devin to leave the car or he's going to get tased. Frost continues to give out commands. Devin complies with them, but slowly, as he is seen trying to figure out how to record the officer while complying. After a minute, Devin is laying down on the blacktop next to his vehicle, trying to figure out what is going on. The officer eventually violently removes the phone from Devin's hands and is trying to handcuff him, even though he is on the ground and complying. Devin asks the officer what he is doing, says he doesn't have a weapon, says he can't do that, and is repeatedly seen and heard trying to have a conversation about what is going on while the officer physically handles the young man, or old boy, whatever you want to refer to a 17-year-old as. He's continually physically handling him while he is on his stomach, on the ground, with his arms outstretched. The officer is trying to handcuff him, but confused and scared Devin continues to want to talk about what was going on. The cop doesn't want to talk. He wants subservience. A disagreement about whether or not one's rights were on and not having a license on hand at the moment are trivial reasons for pulling a 17-year-old out of a car and handcuffing him. Jonathan Frost must have been a petty officer. Probably a bad time for a joke that's a play on words, but I'm bad at being appropriate and I can't cry all the time. I'll die of dehydration. So when the officer grabs the outstretched arms of Devin to put them behind his back, Devin instinctively jerks them back. The officer then steps back and tases Devin. Devin recoils and cries out in pain. Then something frustrating happens. The camera on the cop becomes detached. With Devin's camera phone taken from him, no video footage is available of what exactly played out. There are a few blurry intermittent shots of what goes on. It's really hard to tell what exactly happens. It appears Devin was getting up off the ground after being tased. After this, the screen is black. Perhaps Devin ran away. Perhaps in his fight or flight mode after being assaulted and tasered, he went after Frost to defend himself from another jolt from the taser. Certainly many people, when under assault by another person, will turn and attack their aggressor to try to save their own life. It's a perfectly reasonable and defensible response. The officer said he was afraid for his life after tasing the suspect and was then hit by Devin. He did have some injuries before arriving at the hospital. According to him, these were from Devin turning on him. Maybe, maybe not. There's only one eyewitness because the other one is dead. The only thing we have to go on is the audio evidence and the testimony of Frost. The camera shows black. A handful of seconds go by, and then we can hear seven shots being fired as Devin screams his last. What we know for sure is that within 10 minutes of flashing his lights at someone who he thought had their brights on, like people do to communicate with their neighbor information they might want to know, Devin was dead. Two other people flashed their lights at the officer earlier that night to inform him his brights were on. Thankfully, Frost didn't pull over all three, or who knows what would have happened. Of course, whether or not this police officer driving his new vehicle actually had his brights on and just couldn't figure out how to turn them off, or if the regular headlights on his vehicle just seemed too bright, is inconsequential. He killed a young man who was unfortunate enough to be the person the officer decided to pull over for flashing his lights at him. Someone who was just trying to help, who then had the courage to insist on being treated like a human being by the police officer, and did not feel he was being treated fairly. Frost faces no charges and is back on duty. So refrain from flashing those brights if you live in Michigan. I'd like to read to you a statement from the family of Devin, just to hear from the perspective of the victimized. They say, "As we take this action today, we are outraged at the huge miscarriage of justice done to our son, Devin Guilford. For 3 months, we agonized in confusion, trying to figure out how our son, who had never even been in a serious fight, was shot 7 times coming from basketball at church and going to his girlfriend's to watch movies. We played scenarios over in our minds, trying to figure out how Devin could have acted so out of character and attacked Frost as they told us he had. Since the moment we viewed the body camera footage, our confusion has turned to outrage over what was done to Devin at the hands of Frost and the whole Eaton County, quote-unquote, justice system. We always had great respect for law enforcement and the men and women who chose that profession in the past. But we must say that belief has been shaken to the core by the actions of Frost and refusal of the Eaton County prosecutor to hold Frost accountable. The failed criminal justice system forces us to seek other avenues for some kind of justice for Devin. The story of Devin is a lesson. Do not treat cops with respect. If you are in an encounter with a police officer, one of the last things you should do is treat them with respect. It sounds counterintuitive at first. I realize that. But let's place ourselves in the positions of Devin and Officer Frost. In real life, we would probably respect each other. I respect most people, and most decent and rational people who know me tend to respect me. So let's say we share a mutual respect. I just got a new car with really bright headlights, so bright it seems like my brights are on to some people. You see this while driving and flash your lights at me to let me know. I'm a little frustrated by this, as people have been doing it all night, and I want to prove to you I don't have my brights on. I wave you to the side of the road, and you honor my request. I come to your car, and you say you flashed me because my brights were on. I, understanding this is a common misconception at this point, inform you that no, the regular headlights are just bright on this new model car. Let's say you don't believe me. Well, since I'm not a small child, I'll substantiate my claim instead of just getting into a back and forth of he said, she said. Maybe I bring you over to my car and show you my headlights and have you work them for me to show you I really was being honest when I said I didn't have my brights on. Or maybe you see something and it turns out I was wrong. I thought I had my brights off, but it's a new vehicle and I actually was mistaken and had my brights on the whole time. Silly me. Or I could simply demonstrate to you the difference between my regular headlights and my brights to prove to you my brights were off, and you didn't need to go around flashing people for headlights like this. You know what for sure doesn't happen? Neither of us end up dead, because we're respectable people who show equal respect to others, because we can talk to one another and sort out our differences through understanding, or at least be okay with our differences. We're ethical people who treat people decently, and so acting respectfully toward one another makes perfect sense, and we will both be safe. Many cops are decent people who will treat you decently, who should be respected. But when an officer pulls you over or interacts with you, you don't know. They might be. They might not be. Unless you are confident that they are a respectable person who acts ethically and kindly toward others, and treats his or her fellow man as their equal, do not treat a cop with respect, or you might end up severely injured or dead. Do not respect cops you don't know when you come into contact with them, and do not recommend anyone else respect cops as a way of helping the interaction go smoothly. Instead, I recommend you treat police officers you don't know like a 350-pound ripped MMA fighter on steroids with a mental disorder, who broke into your house with a gun, who can kill you and not face any charges for his murder. You don't respect someone who acts like this, but you do what they say. You talk kindly with a sincere tone. You honor their requests. You assure them you're not going to hurt them. You don't make any sudden movements, and you comply with everything you can as quickly and as calmly as you can, at least as far as you are willing to, in order to keep your life. I have heard a rumor that cops are trained in de-escalation. Do not count on this. I am not sure how valid it is. Instead, you take the lead in de-escalation. If you think about the officer like a crazy person with a gun who can kill you and get away with it, this will help. Trust yourself to remain calm despite the circumstances and seek to appease the cop, obeying immediately while moving slowly, not disagreeing, and keeping your hands in a position where the officer doesn't feel endangered. If they violate your rights, try to deal with that later. What the goal should be is getting out of the situation with your life. You don't have to act this way around cops. If you think activism is the way to go, which is something I admire, then you can be like Devin and insist upon your rights as a human. Certainly it can be done better than he did, but he was 17 and can't blame him too much for not knowing how best to go about it. I did dumb things at 17 too. But you should know going into it, if you're going to insist on your rights and insist on being treated with respect as someone's equal, one consequence of that could be your own death. The problem of these individual officers acting poorly is definitely not reflective of every cop. I'm confident it's not reflective of most cops. Most do not behave this way, but some do. Some are drawn to the profession because of the power it gives them over other people. And they are more dangerous than many criminals because they cannot be held accountable, or at least not very easily. I know some cops and some former cops. I like the ones I know. I enjoy talking to them. I think they do a lot of good. My parents used to live next door to a cop. Now my mother is the only one who lives next door to a cop. Sad story, yes, indeed. If you want to know more, I guess you can email me and I'll link you to a blog series I did about my emotional dealing with it. Anyway, this guy that lived next door, I didn't know him very well, and he didn't know me very well. My parents weren't home one day, and it turns out they moved their house key. I arrived there and needed to get inside. So I broke in by jiggling a lock loose on the basement door I knew would allow me to enter. The neighbor, while off duty, was aware and saw this. He came over to the house and started talking to me. He thought I might be a burglar or knew there was a chance, so he made sure I wasn't, found out who I was, and made sure that everything going on was above board. What a great neighbor to have. A lot of people who sign up to be police are like this. They're people who want to help others by preventing crimes against them. I am not trying to say most cops are bad people and shouldn't be trusted. I'm not suggesting a war on cops. But the lack of accountability is a serious problem. There are 5 reasons I will suggest which help explain why it is difficult to hold police accountable for their misbehaviors when they do misbehave. The first is that we live in a culture of people who defend the police and thank the police for their law enforcement, even without knowing specifically what the cop one is thanking has done. They're just a group seen as collectively good and helpful and beneficial in society. And police often do serve a legitimate function in society by protecting people and their property. And many people have pleasant interactions with them regularly because many of them are pleasant people. The problem is treating this group as a collective and praising the group as a whole. Instead, people should praise good cops and speak out against the violent abusers. One can always be more trusting of an organization that gets rid of its bad actors quickly and decisively. If you actually want cops to be a more trusted group and be a more trustworthy group, the way of doing that is to help expose and get rid of untrustworthy people. But the people who seem to want cops to be most trusted in society aren't the ones who seem to be doing the most amount of calling out bad cops for their bad actions. Instead, one can often see them victim-blaming when a cop abuses someone, saying they should just obey the law or show more respect. So many people who do the most work shining light on these abuses are anarchists, a tiny minority of thankless heroes, like a bunch of Batmen from The Dark Knight. Heroes the people of their cities need, but not the ones they deserve. Is that too much? That's probably too much. I just appreciate the work they do. People are also quick to defend police in general because they're afraid. The police have a coercive monopoly on protection, and so they are the people everyone pays to protect them, and the only protection a lot of people know of, and they don't see any alternative. So they are motivated internally to trust the police or else live in fear their protector is untrustworthy. Another reason it can be difficult to hold police accountable is that cops who speak out are often shut down, threatened, demoted, or fired, which is the opposite of what you would expect from a good organization who saw itself as good, wanted to be good, and so wanted to have those who were not acting in line with its principles and central goals removed from the organization. You would expect a group who wanted to be positively perceived by the community to closely monitor their corruption. But this is only sometimes the case. Oftentimes, police who reveal corruption are not treated like heroes who are helping hold an organization accountable, but criminals, betrayers of their own kind. One story of this comes from the Free Thought Project. I'll read you a chunk of the article. The witness is himself a Baltimore City police officer. He was the whistleblower providing key testimony against Sergeant Marinos Gialamis and Officer Anthony Williams, who told jurors what really happened, he said, after a drug suspect was caught. According to prosecutors, the sergeant and officer took the drug suspect out of a police van after he had been arrested and then assaulted him inside of a house on Prentice Place in East Baltimore. The house belonged to the girlfriend of Williams, who showed up off-duty and took part in the assault. The key witness in the case, Officer Joe Crystal, was also on the scene that night. Crystal told the county officer that officers within the Baltimore City Police Department are not happy with him, thinking he is the person responsible for talking to the state attorney's office. An incident where Crystal found a rat on his windshield of his car happened just after Gialamis and Williams were indicted in 2012. Crystal was then labeled a snitch and targeted by others in the department, including four different supervisors. According to WBAL-TV, Crystal didn't keep quiet. He became a witness in the investigation of Gialamis and Williams, and word apparently spread fast. I remember a sergeant drawing pictures of cheese on post-its and writing, "Crystal is cheese," and telling me that people are saying I snitched on Gialamis, Crystal said. Crystal kept a private journal detailing the taunting and harassment that he said came from four different supervisors and other officers. The detective pulls up and says, "Hey, are you guys having a cheese party?" Crystal said, "I didn't want any problems." And he said, "What? I'm just asking whether you are having a cheese party. I know rats like cheese." Crystal said he missed out on a new assignment to a different squad. He said a lieutenant told him why. "I've done big cases, good enough cases. For all intents and purposes, I should go to the squad, but it was perceived that I snitched on Sergeant Gialamis, and since I snitched on him, I couldn't go. To be on that squad, you had to do things in the gray area, and this was going to follow me for my entire career." The workplace wasn't the only place the corrupt cops targeted Crystal. Crystal said the pressure mounted and a sergeant called him at home. "I was home with my wife, and he started screaming at me, telling me Gialamis is saying I am snitching and I am the star witness." Crystal said, "The punchline of it all, you better pray to God you're not the star witness. He said it multiple times. When I hung up the phone, I said to my wife, I think he basically just threatened me." Also, according to Crystal, The department tried to set him up. A few days after the phone call at his home, he was asked by a supervisor to change the date on a police voucher. When that happened, I was in panic mode, because what I had believed was that he wanted me to falsify these documents, and then he was going to be charged with falsifying a report or something like that, Crystal said. The four cops accused of the harassment remain in the same job or better. If you want, you can search and find tons of different stories like this. It happens all the time. Those who expose government corruption and seek to hold the government accountable for their murders and misbehaviors are rarely treated with great respect and honor by the organizations they are trying to expose. This is because these organizations don't want to be held accountable. I mean, just in the last few years, you have some of the bigger names like Bradley Manning, who exposed military misactions and war crimes committed by soldiers. And as a result, instead of having the protection of being a whistleblower to hold an organization and the people within it accountable for acting evilly, he was taken to jail, put in an isolation chamber, was subjected to conditions of sleep deprivation, and other various forms of torture, although I don't know that that stuff is necessarily torture. It might be torture, but it's nonviolent torture. You have Edward Snowden, who exposed NSA illegal spying on U.S. citizens, and he can't even come back into the country because they're going to hold him on trial for exposing something that was done against the government's own laws, but is, by all accounts, a gross violation of human rights. But the government doesn't protect whistleblowers. They want to put them in a position where no one else wants to whistleblow again. Even just recently, there were the drone papers that were released, and there were four military members who were part of the drone program, and they said that they came to realize the drone airstrikes were used as a terrorist recruiting tool. They talked about people who were flying those drones in a part of the program coming to work and showing up drunk and on bath salts and using synthetic marijuana, and they use words like calling children fun-sized terrorists, or saying that killing kids in their bombings was like cutting the grass before it grows too long. If there are any troops who are heroes or should be thanked for their service, then these guys should. But that's not the way the world treats them. Most people don't want to know the truth about the evils of the U.S. military. The federal government froze their bank accounts and credit cards and threatened their families. It's amazing how the massive number of people in the social media community who are constantly thanking veterans for their service and saying we should be more grateful for them never, from what I have seen, take up for these veterans who are being persecuted by their own government for shining light in the darkness and revealing the truth about their evils. These Air Force service members who are exposing evil at cost to themselves should be the people we point our kids to and tell them that this is the type of heroic behavior you should be looking up to. Doesn't appear to happen, though. Former service members who oppose the present U.S. foreign policy are seemingly only ever thanked by that crowd for their participation in it, not for their revealing of the truth about it. Government at all levels, from the politicians to the EPA, the FDA, the military, and the police, have a self-interest in avoiding accountability. With the police, they aren't the only ones who are trying to protect that group from accountability. The government as a whole also has an interest in protecting the police. The government makes the laws with the legislative branch, enforces them with the executive branch, and determines whether or not someone has broken them with the judicial branch. While some people thought putting these three groups onto separate branches would be adequate to prevent corruption, they seem to ignore the fact that these branches are all connected to the same tree. They have the same trunk and the same root system, and all rely on the same soil, the citizens, to take their nutrients from. Three separate trees might help hold each tree accountable, but not three branches of the same tree. The legislative branch requires the executive branch, the police, to enforce its laws. The judicial branch requires the police to enforce its decisions. The more laws to enforce, the more law enforcement officers are necessary, and thus the more valuable the time of each officer becomes, and the more important their job appears. All these parts of the same organization need each other, benefit from each other, and are incentivized to protect and work with the other organization for their own well-being. I'm confident there are some lone wolves who don't go along with the flow of government self-interest, but I suspect they are exceptional and not the norm. The incentives of the organization are for everyone to be working together within the government smoothly, with amiable relationships within the groups. We should anticipate the average person going along with the incentives inherent in the system itself. And these incentives mean we should expect all of these branches to be looking out for one another and protecting each other from accountability. As I've described before, this monopoly on these services also makes it difficult to hold them accountable. No matter how bad police corruption gets, I have to pay for their services. I cannot simply say I don't think they're doing a good job, or even say I think they're doing a bad job, and choose not to pay for their protection, and instead devote that money to hiring another group. If I do not pay for their services, like the mafia, they will come to my house to violently extort the money for their services from me. If I defend myself and my property, they'll kill me. We've been through this before. This is simply the way the government works. Because they have a coercive monopoly on protection, they lack the tremendous amount of accountability the free market provides. If people were free to stop paying the police and instead divert those resources toward insured security providers to ensure the protection of persons and their property, this would do loads to help hold the police accountable. If they were losing customers to other organizations who more safely, cheaply, and effectively provided the services citizens deemed valuable, they would have to make changes to improve their service and remain in existence. As it is now, it matters little how well or how poorly the police serve the citizens, because they will get paid regardless. This taxpayer funding also contributes to yet another reason it is difficult to hold the police accountable for misbehavior. What often happens in the cases of police brutality is that the individual officers are themselves not criminally charged, but their cases are taken to civil court, and many times the civil court will award victims a sizable chunk of money for their costs, loss, pain, and suffering. But guess who pays them? It's not the individual who committed the brutality or their superior officers, but the city or the police department as a whole. And they receive their money through taxation. So when a victim is awarded financial compensation for police brutality, it is not the police who pay, but the taxpayer, the citizens of the area. The people who are held accountable for officer mistreatment of citizens are often the citizens themselves. While it is nice that victims receive something for their mistreatment, these civil court settlements do next to nothing to hold the police accountable. Instead, they pay these settlements using the labor of an innocent third party, the citizenry. All these things and more come together and help give cops special privileges. They can do things that none of us can get away with. Imagine yourself in the place of any of the police officers in the stories I talked about earlier. What if you, a normal citizen without a blue suit and a shiny badge, did exactly what those police officers did? What if you suspected a guy of stealing stuff and then you and your buddies beat him to death for 9 minutes? What if you knocked on someone's door and when the 17-year-old trying to watch a movie opened the door had his Wii controller in his hand, you killed him? What if you pulled someone over for flashing their brights at you and the situation progressively escalated, and after threatening him with violence and assaulting him, you shot him to death? If there was conclusive video evidence of these things, or multiple eyewitnesses to confirm what happened, do you think you would get away with it? You wouldn't, unless you happen to be a politician or some other member of the ruling class. Sometimes people give police extra consideration because of the danger of their job. They are more lenient with officers for being more aggressively violent than the average person because police work is so dangerous. Their job is so unsafe, they must be more aggressive against others to protect themselves. Police work is more dangerous than average, to be sure, but it's safer than things like construction work or farming or being a garbage collector, which is more than twice as dangerous as police work. So be sure to thank your garbage man for risking his life once a week for you. Many police deaths on the job aren't from being killed by their suspects either. A high percentage come from things like heart attacks, which is unsurprising because police have higher rates of obesity than any other profession in the U.S. That alone would make it a more dangerous job, but this factor of danger has nothing to do with being in danger due to apprehending suspects. While police are slightly more likely than the average citizen to be murdered, given that their job frequently involves them violating people's rights, this is to be expected. That's not to justify it when they are murdered. I certainly don't want to do that. But it would actually be shocking if people who engage in the type of behavior cops engage in weren't killed at a higher rate than average. The point I want to make is we shouldn't accept or make excuses for their abusive behavior when they engage in it because of how dangerous their jobs are. Sales clerks are more likely to be murdered on the job than police, but we would never accept the same level of initiatory violence we see the cops engaging in. Let's respect police enough to treat them like people who are capable of controlling themselves and acting more ethically. I understand some of you are still afraid of a world without government because who will protect you and your property? The idea that an organization with a coercive monopoly on protection is the best way to do it appears silly in light of what we know about this organization. Do you know that last year cops took more money from citizens than citizens had burgled from their home? That's right. More money was confiscated through civil asset forfeiture than all the burglaries in the U.S. combined. When the protectors don't have competition, sometimes they become the thieves. Civil asset forfeiture is not some well-regulated, above-board practice where cops only take money from convicted criminals who owe it or who got it illegally. And it's done at an ever-increasing rate and only requires the police officer have a subjective conception of reasonable cause to take someone's assets. It doesn't require the victim even be convicted of a crime. Reasonable cause can even be something as small as having a few thousand dollars cash on your person if you were, say, going to buy a used car or something. And once the assets are in police custody, they become very difficult for people to get back, even if they were doing nothing illegal. Do you think private businesses could get away with stopping people and taking their money without being called out for theft? Without people choosing to do business with someone else who isn't endangering their community by taking their assets? Or without being taken to court to pay back all that they owe and more due to loss of time and energy and frustration and theft, or be imprisoned for being a danger to society? I just don't see people finding behavior like that acceptable if it didn't come from this organization in particular. And some are willing to allow the police the ability to get away with things normal citizens could not get away with because they think it's the cost of having people whose job it is to protect them. While police do a lot of protecting others, I've never said they don't, and I do try to be clear that they do. Not only do they not have to do so in order to keep their job or please their customers, as they have no competition, but they are not lawfully required to protect citizens. Some people don't know this, but according to a Supreme Court ruling, police actually have no lawful duty to protect citizens. They are law enforcement officers. They enforce the law. They are the violent arm of the state to carry out the will of the politicians against the citizens of the country. This isn't why most people sign up to be cops, for sure, but this is their job description. Thus, if the government passes any law which is an inherent violation of people's rights and creates a criminal without a victim, it is the job of the police to be the means of the violent oppression of the government. In light of this, I think of one of the things I find funny about the world I'm living in. On average, people who claim to want smaller government and who do not trust politicians and central planning are more likely to trust and thank the police, who violently carry out the will of the politicians domestically. They don't trust politicians or big government, but they do trust the goons government uses to impose their will on everyone else. And the reverse is often true of the other side, where they do want big government and want politicians to centrally plan things, but they are more likely to criticize the police, the very boots on the ground who will enforce whatever central planning the politicians they like choose to do. It all feels very silly to observe, like I'm watching a political parody take place before my very eyes, except it's real life. Life in my brain is weird. We can find a better way to protect people and their property. We can find a better way to ensure the poor get justice. We can find a better way to keep neighborhoods safe and voluntary. We can find a better way to make organizations which can be held accountable both to actually protect people through involving them financially and who can be held accountable for their abuses of others through market competition, the ability of individuals to choose whether or not to do business with them, and through private courts and arbitrators who are not also connected with the organization guilty of abuse. There's no reason we have to give up the rights of ourselves or others or to accept such a high level of abuse as necessary in order to be safe. There are better ways, and if we set people free, they will only improve. It's odd that many people who praise free markets and think services like healthcare, technology, repairmen, retail, and food production are so important, we should never entrust them to the government. They recognize just how screwed up coercive central planning is, and instead want individuals acting freely to provide services necessary for human survival, because these relationships take into account consumer needs, desires, and maintain an efficient meeting of consumer needs due to competition between providers. So food production is so important, we shouldn't endanger it by entrusting it to the government. But security services are, what, unimportant? Or they are so important we must entrust them to the government? The inconsistent application is odd. And then you have another group of people who seem to be afraid of the free market, because if you allow people to engage in voluntary exchanges with one another, then monopolies in technology or retail or farming or service industries might form. And then the world would be destroyed by one company who managed to please customers so much better than every single competitor that they all went out of business. I mean, what would we do if so many customers and employees were pleased? They express fear about voluntary monopolies existing. But come on, guys and gals, the government is a coercive monopoly that exists through initiatory violence. It is so confusing to me when people are against monopolies that form voluntarily, which they never seem to do in a free society, but they support monopolies, so they're really just against a theory that monopolies will form if you allow people to be free. And in order to prevent that, they support monopolies that have their power through violence. If you're against monopolies for essential services, like protection, then please be against the violent monopoly the state has over protection services. Competition between voluntary organizations will lead to better outcomes. Okay, I'm talking way too much. 2 weeks in a row, I just keep going on, and what a depressing episode to boot. Next week, I am going to tell you wonderful listeners a few more stories, but this time, I swear, on my mother's urn, which doesn't exist because she's still alive, and I don't even know if she wants to be cremated, but I promise that the stories I tell you next week will be happy and joyful, full of hope and peace. If you would like to contact me, you can email me at jeremiahjm@gmail.com. Again, the website is christianarchy.net. That's www.christianarchy.net. And there's tons of links in this episode. You can find them if you just go to the website and search for 27, which will bring you right to the episode and link to the sources I used. Hope you enjoyed. Hope you have a lovely week. And I will talk to you soon. Peace.
into the dark.